Hello, welcome to my podcast, Greatest Hits. I'm Chris Cafaro, and this is my show. I want to thank my sponsor, Edge Grip and Studio, for hooking me up big time. Best studio in LA by far. Let's just say this. Welcome to my new podcast, Sam.
Welcome to your world.
Exactly. Here we are.
What a fun world it is.
Here we are in my dungeon.
What an unpredictable world.
I know it exactly. So this is my, I'm calling this podcast show Greatest Hits.
Cafaro's greatest hits?
Well, my...
Whose greatest hits? Exactly,
your greatest hits. Everybody's greatest hits. So my question to you, first of all, introduce yourself to everybody.
My name is Sam.
And?
Milgram.
Okay.
Mr. Musichead, a.k.a.
A.k.a. Exactly. And where are you from? Give me the basics here so people know.
From
people
the Motor City.
Motor City. You know...
Deep in the heart of the Motor
City. In Detroit, though?
In Detroit. City of Detroit.
Okay.
Northwest Side.
A friend of mine is actually running around buying property up in Michigan.
She's not a bad idea.
Yeah, that's what she felt. She said
I grew up near Mumford High School, which I understand they just tore down.
Uh-oh.
Or part of it, most of it.
So we've known each other a long time.
It has been a while.
A long while. I know it was before you...
A tenth of a century.
Yeah, something like that. So a basic question I have for you two is, so you own Mr. Musichead. My favorite gallery.
Proprietor.
And I tell everybody I know, when it comes to music, you're the man that knows music and photography as more than anybody I know.
Thank
Almost
you.
More than me, but you know it pretty good.
Well, I cover a few more genres than you, maybe.
Exactly.
But,
yeah. But you know, so I want to ask, let's get the basics out of the way here, but like, I always ask everybody this question, but like, what got you into music? What was it that, like, all of a sudden, at what age? Because for me, it was around 5, 6 years old, I think, seeing the Beatles in 65.
Well, I think I was just born with it. I think it's just music is just part of who I am.
Yeah.
My father took me to see a classical guitarist named Andre Segovia.
I know he is.
Yeah. A lot of, I don't know, whoever's watching or listening to this may or may not know who he was.
Yeah.
It's worth checking out. He was the first... grand, world-renowned classical guitarist.
Right.
And he brought the classical guitar, Spanish guitar, to the forefront.
I know.
To the world stage. And
because I think you can't really name a Spanish guitarist, like, before him or after him. Like,
well,
he is
Julian Bream was a disciple of his. Okay. Everyone's a disciple of Andre Segovia. He was the first main guy.
Yeah.
And a lot of compositions that were made for him to play with him in mind.
Oh, okay.
And he did interpretations of other works on guitar, and he popularized it, really, the classical guitar.
So you saw that first?
So that was my first concert, and I immediately said, well, that's what I want to do. So my father went out and got me a guitar that was larger than me. I was 6 years old. I could barely put my arm over it. Got me a classical guitar teacher, and I tried playing those steel strings until my fingers bled, and I think I mastered one song, and it was actually a traditional folk song called Greensleeves, which people may or may not know, but
closer,
anyway.
Closer.
Anyway, it was a failed attempt, but I put down the guitar for a few years and waited for the Rolling Stones to come out with I Can't Get No Satisfaction, which was much easier to play.
Bar chords, bar chords.
Exactly.
Right? I always tell people, once I learned there was what a bar chord was, I was like, man, this is a lot easier.
Way easier.
Way easier. You can play any punk rock song with that, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Pretty much. So
I joined my first band in 1965.
65.
Rock and roll band, yeah.
What was the name of the band?
The first band I was in was called Davis and West.
Okay.
It was named after the nation's first freeway, which was built in Detroit. It was called the Davis and Freeway. They ripped down a whole row of houses to build a freeway.
I love
to connect two other streets.
But I love the idea. It's just that, to me, that's really cool. Like, we're named after a freeway.
Not just any freeway. It's the Motor City, so of course you had to do something with cars. Anyway.
All right. So what that was your first music? You're like you getting into music like in high school, like what bands were you listening to?
Well, you know, in high school
it was
underground radio. So
right.
WABX in Detroit was one of the first underground radio stations in the country. So we listened to that, and that's how we got exposed to all the underground music.
Oh, okay.
In addition to the hits that were on Top 40 radio.
What were you listening to? Like, what? Like, who? When you say the underground, who was underground at that time? Because you're talking
what year? 66. It was 13th floor elevators. It was the Blues Magoos.
That is underground. That is really underground. Because in the you're saying 66, that would be like
I'm thinking Leaves.
Yeah, I'm thinking like Woodstock. Well, when was Woodstock? 68?
69. August.
Summer 69.
You know, 67 was really the year, the breakout year for experimental music. You know, it was Hendrix and Airplane and all the San Francisco bands and everything coming out of London. I mean, the Yardbirds, that was 66. The new Yardbirds was Jimmy Page's foray, you know.
I got to shoot the Jefferson Airplane reunion once for Rolling Stone. It was really cool to meet Grace Slick because I knew her daughter, China, really well, actually. And so I finally get to shoot Grace Slick, and she was just like, and the band, and it was like, I have to show you the picture. It's really cool. But it was like, hey, Grace, nice to meet you. I'm friends with China. She goes, yeah, she told me, and da-da-da. And she was
that's great.
She was so Grace Slick. Like, you know what I mean? Like, just curmudgeon.
She's the coolest.
Yeah, very cool. So your first concert was a classical?
That was my first one, yeah.
What was your first rock concert?
Well, we used to go to these clubs in Northwest Detroit and hear bands. So, you know, the Bob Seger System and, oh my God, what were some of the other bands in Detroit? You know, the SRC.
Mm-hmm. Where was Ted Nugent at this time?
Ted Nugent, the Amboy Dukes, they played my high school. So we saw the Amboy Dukes opened for The Who and played my high school cafeteria in 1968 at Southfield High School. That was a good one. That was a bright moment. Cafeteria.
Okay. So now I know that in Detroit you had a record store, music store. What was a record store? What was that called?
It was called Sam's Jams. We opened in 1978. And inspired by a trip to California where I went to a couple of used record stores. In Berkeley, California.
Okay. Ooh, what's
Rasputin's and Leopold's?
Oh,
those are two on the campus.
Remember them well.
Yeah, they're. I think one of them might still be around.
Wouldn't be surprised. Yeah. The record store we had in San Jose was a place called Underground Records, and they had used and new. And I used to ride my bike there all the time just to go buy an LP. You know, it was like about a mile away, and it was just like get on my bike, my 10-speed, and then just ride, get that LP. Run home.
That was it.
Put on the turntable, and I was in heaven, you know?
That's it. Well, there was a great used record store in L.A. on Melrose called Aaron's.
Yep.
That I used to visit every time I came out to L.A.
Yep. There was Aaron's and Vinyl Fetish.
Yeah.
On Melrose. My friend used to own that. He used to do really well.
Vinyl Fetish, yeah.
Used to hang out there, actually, since it's a few blocks away.
Right.
So, okay, so you got all this music thing. You come, you do the music thing. You come to L.A. Did you come to L.A. to start getting the photo gallery stuff, or why did you come to L.A.?
Well, after the record store, or during the stint of owning the record store, I also bought an old movie theater on the equivalent of Sunset Boulevard. It's called Woodward Avenue.
Okay.
And I bought an old movie theater in the same little suburb of Detroit and converted it into a music club, and that was called the Magic Bag. And we booked a lot of Detroit bands there.
Right.
Kid Rock used to play there. The Howlin' Diablos is a great band from there. There were a lot of great bands in Detroit playing there. Jack White actually played in a cowpunk band called Goober and the Peas that played there.
Did Big Chief play there?
Big Chief? No, but...
it's the only band I ever
Mitch
shot from
Ryder.
Detroit.
But we also booked national acts. We had Ben Harper played on his first tour. Jeff Buckley played there. Graham Parker, Leo Kottke. We had a lot of interesting bands play there. So anyway, I did that for a few years and finally decided that I wanted to motor west.
Okay.
I didn't take Route 66, but made it out here anyway.
I took Flight 422.
Exactly. 420, I think it was.
Exactly.
But we made it out here. And I had full intention of going to work for... This was 1996.
Oh, God, I've been here longer
than
you. And
I was intending on going to work for one of the record labels.
Yeah. I want to be in the music biz.
That's right. I wanted to experiment on what it was like to actually work for the man. But it didn't work out. And I decided to... go back into business and open a gallery. I thought that was the thing to do.
And how long has Mr. Music Head been open now?
We opened in 1998.
So that's, can't even do, we're both like the math. Don't do the math.
17 years.
Yeah, that's amazing. It's the best gallery in LA.
Thank you.
If you like music, I always tell people, if you like music and you like photography, there's no better place to go.
Thank you.
You know, it's the place. So my, so let's talk about, basically I want to talk about photography and music photography since I've been doing it now for 40 years. I've always, you know, I grew up in the Bay Area, so I grew up looking at Rolling Stone at an early age, and so I was influenced by, I'm sure, like people.
Baron Wallman.
And I think Jim Marshall was shooting for them a little bit.
And Annie.
Annie and like things. So I saw that, even though I was actually more interested in being a, I wanted to shoot for Playboy.
Right.
But I was like, but I was looking at those magazines and seeing that stuff. But I started taking pictures at my 16 was my first concert I took pictures at, which was Earth, Wind & Fire.
Great. Yeah. What a great band. Yeah. Must have been fun to photograph them.
Visually, they were great. I just had a crappy camera, though. It was like, and I was sitting way up in the middle of nowhere. So, but
did you have a Zoom at least?
No. And it was like bad. It was bad. But you know what I always tell people, like, I love music photography. Not even, I always say, even if I didn't take it myself, I always tell people I love, it's like my favorite kind of photography to look at. Mostly I like portraits. I'm not a big fan of live photos, but I like portraits. I like, because I think musicians.
Why do you like portraits?
Because I think musicians have so much soul. Is my kind of thing. I don't, actors, you know, people that have soul, I always say take a better picture. People who have something there, and my job as a photographer has always been to capture that. Like, I work real hard to say, like,
well,
I
that's
say,
the challenge, isn't it? To get them.
To get that.
I mean, it, to me, this is what I always say, what makes a great photograph, and I don't know if I'm stepping ahead of us here.
No,
but,
no.
But it speaks to what you're talking about as a portraitist. But knowing when to click the shutter in any photographic situation is what separates the good photographers from the great ones. Whether you're talking about a live shot, anticipating the moment. But I have to believe that if you're shooting a portrait, to try to get to that person's soul in a portrait photograph, to get that image, to know when they're going to be revealing that soul in that to you, it's got to be a real challenge.
I think I always tell people I think it is, but it's something I've after 40 years it's not as big a challenge as it once was. Now I have it down. Now I can do it in my sleep, basically.
So are there verbal triggers that you know?
Oh, I have tricks.
Tricks.
Sam, I always tell people this. If you've never been to a photo shoot of mine, you got to come someday. You'll laugh because I always tell people, never, I tell people, I've said this for 25 years. You can ask my assistant. He'll tell you. He'll be like, oh, same shit all the time. I go, never judge me on my photo shoot personality. Because I always hate meeting people out during a photo shoot because you're like, they think, God, what an idiot this guy is. But it's just the way I behave, knowing that it works to get somebody to relax or to,
right.
You know what I mean? Like every time you shoot a musician, the first words out of their mouth usually is, I don't like doing photo shoots. I hate having my picture taken. So right off the bat, you're against the wall. And it's like, okay, great. I always tell people, do you know the drummer, Jim Keltner? You ever hear of him?
Yeah.
I used to shoot him a lot for Drum Workshop. And the first time I ever met him and shot him, I said to him, hi, I go, hi, Jim, I'm Chris. He goes, hi, Chris, I hate having my picture taken. And I literally went, okay, let's get started. You know, it's like, wow, you know, like, you don't have to say that, but he did. And so I felt like, I always tell people, like,
at least he's honest.
Yeah, and I hate having my picture taken, so I totally understand. And so for me, I always say, my job is just to get them to relax, not think about what we're doing, which is doing a photo shoot, and then kind of, like, distract them and then... And then do my thing. And I would say it's like shooting a 2-year-old. If you're shooting a 2-year-old baby, you're like, look at the birdie. And you're kind of, it's kind of that kind of a thing.
Right.
But I just find
that. You tell them to forget about the birdie.
Yeah. Look at the birdie, put down the drugs and look at the birdie. but it's like, you know, what I find too is like I always like portraits better. And I when I look at some of the stuff you have hanging up at the gallery, I'm always just like, fuck, I wish I shot Deborah Harry. Fuck, I wish I shot, you know, The Clash. Or I wish I shot, there's so many people. People ask me all the time, like, do you, you know, you've shot so many people, Chris. Like, is there anybody you haven't shot? I think for every person I've shot, there's at least one that I haven't that I would have died to. Like, I would have given anything to shoot Freddie Mercury.
Mm-hmm.
anything just to spend an afternoon.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Like, absolutely.
You know, there's
that's part of the fun of it for you. It's not even the photo shooting. It's just hanging out with these people and getting to know them a little bit. And
well, I'm going to, I'll tell you a story, honestly, because this isn't about me, but I'll tell you a story that like when it all clicked for me was my second shoot I did for Musician Magazine was my second actual music shoot. I got to shoot Maurice White, the leader and founder of Earth and Fire. Right. So my friend Gary Kupke hires me. You need to go shoot, do this shoot. And I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like literally 3 years prior, I was at a concert and it was like in high school, they were God. And, you know, this whole thing. And I got to go spend the day and I got to shoot Maurice White. And then afterwards I said, would you like to see the pictures when I get them done? He's like, yeah, come up to the house and bring them. I said, okay. So I go up to Beverly Hills the like couple days later. I bring the photos with a light, big light box and, you know, the chromes and the loop and the whole thing. And we're sitting there in his house and we're just going through the pictures and I'm hanging out with Maurice White. Somebody literally years prior was like God to me. And I'm just like, okay, I want to do this forever. Mm-hmm. I want to shoot all my idols. I want to shoot all my heroes. I'm going to do this. And that was like I always tell people that was the moment when I'm sitting there and we were walking out his house in his garage. And he had more, I'd never seen so many gold and platinum records, but stacked up, like, you know, like all these boxes, just in the garage, you know, in the garage, just piled up like junk, like just like from all over the world. Hey, this is that's the way of the world. It's, you know, quadruple platinum. And it was just like dust and crap all over. Like, it was just like, there were so many, he probably couldn't even hang them all. It was like ridiculous. And I'm just
didn't have a trophy room.
No, but it was like, at that point, I was like, this is it. Music and photography.
So you got to talk music with him?
Talked to him about jazz, a lot of jazz. Yeah. And I was, you know, talking to him about a lot of jazz.
He drummed with Ramsey Lewis, I believe.
He played with Ramsey Lewis, produced Ramsey Lewis, but he also played with, before
Chicago
that.
Chicago Boy.
Yeah. I can't think before that he did something else. I think he played with Miles as well.
Mm.
Might have. I'll have to think about that. So.
Yeah, he's bad.
Is there, what are the photos that you like at the gallery? If I walked in and said, I need to buy a music photo, you know, I want the best thing. What would you say? I know which one I want. Someday I'll have enough money to buy it from you, but I know which one I want.
Well, one of my favorite photos, I'm very partial to it being from Detroit, is a photo of Stevie Wonder.
Ugh, that's good. I love the David Bowies.
Oh, yeah. The Bowies are great. Those are, well, the ones we have.
The big ones.
Duffy, those are. Iconic.
So my question,
those are great portraits.
Speaking of him, because I just saw like a little documentary on him. It's on YouTube or something like that. He's still around, right?
No. Duffy passed, I believe, 2010.
Right. And he just was known for shooting Bowie? Was that
he started out as a fashion photographer.
Right.
And he got very, very famous in Europe.
Right.
For shooting Fashion Vogue and you know, a lot of the biggest magazines in that industry. And he segued into rock and roll because he was on the scene with his with David Bailey and
my hero.
The guy, Donovan, I'm forgetting his name. His first name. And they were known as the Black Trinity because they partied so much.
Mm.
Anyway, they he got into the rock and roll scene and met David Bowie. They hit it off, and he ended up doing 5 photo shoots with him.
Wow.
So.
I would just happy to do one.
Yeah, that would be amazing. Yeah.
So who?
Well, he's so photogenic, too.
Who, besides me, who are your favorite music photographers? Who are the guys that are because the way I judge photographers and artists in general is I think you have to have a body of work. You can't do just like, hey, I shot so-and-so band for a year and that's what I got and you make a living off of that or whatever. But who are the photographers that really stand out? You can say, come on.
I will not single out photographers. I represent
then you can just say me.
I like that you are my favorite photographer.
I am, put it this way, Sam, I am the greatest photographer in
the money in the envelope.
I'm the greatest photographer in this room right now.
Exactly.
And on my block. I've said it I've been on my block for 25 years, and I always tell people, I know I'm the greatest photographer on Sycamore Avenue. Without a doubt. I don't care who lives on this block.
Absolutely.
But so is there nobody that that you feel like is a, because I know, like, I have to say, like, I'm a big Jim Marshall fan, but I also feel like I don't really know a lot about him, but I just feel like he had so many great iconic images. Like, he must have busted his ass.
He had a great eye. He had a great way with people, which is why I think he could disarm them in a moment and get them to reveal a piece of their personality to him, and that's why he was so good. And he knew where to stand and where to shoot, and you know, he was not really a portraitist in the classical sense. You know?
I think it was more like a photojournalist.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Kind of like just capturing what's going on around.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, there's you have so many freaking photographers there. It's ridiculous, and so much art. Is there anybody you're looking? Are you looking for more people, more photographers?
I'm always looking for great images, always. And one of the things I really enjoy about what I do is I love digging through the archives and finding images that may have been overlooked by the photographers, or maybe they took pictures of a musician who maybe they're not a big fan of their music, but they were hired to do the shoot, and then I find, oh yeah, I shot him, and it's like, oh, you're kidding. Realize what you have here.
Yeah. What are the big sellers? What bands or artists are big sellers? Beatles?
The Beatles, the Stones, Zeppelin.
Yeah.
You know, those are,
I would think it's like the
but I like to tell people, I sell a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I mean, Bowie, we just had a Tom Waits exhibit. We sell Tom Waits images. I mean, we sell a bit of everything. Some jazz, some R&B, some hip hop, some, you know, a little bit of everything.
What advice do you give to people collecting? Because, like, I want to talk about this whole limited edition thing. So what advice do you give to people about collecting?
You need to do a little homework.
Yeah.
And understand, you know, a little bit about photography, the history of photography, the history of photographic prints.
Yeah.
Understand a little bit about it before you dive into it. I mean, if you can align yourself with someone who you trust to give you good advice, just like you would in the stock market.
Exactly.
I mean, art is an investment, whether you're talking about paintings, limited edition prints, photographs, in any medium. There are people who are experts in it, so either you can do your homework and learn about it. And
do you ever consider taking your work and everything, going to some of these big things that they're doing now around the world, Art Basel, whatever it's called?
I've thought about it. I need to go to one of those big shows and see what's going on.
It seems it's like the thing to do now for art. It just seems like it's this like convention for artists where you can collect.
I've been to other, you know, smaller versions of that in Los Angeles. You know, they have Photo LA, they have Paris. They
never done anything like that.
You know, there are quite a few photo exhibits where collectors go and attend and look and, you know, sometimes purchase. Supposedly Art Basel is the cutting edge of the new art that's available. I think, like in everything, you have to sift through a lot to get to what's good and what's valuable, and you have to know a little bit about who's collectible and who isn't before you buy. But I tell everyone when they're buying art is you should buy what you love.
That's what I tell people. I always say to people, if you love Pearl Jam, buy Pearl Jam, whether it's worth $1 million or not. Buy what the bands you like.
Well, that's what I would do. And buy the image you like. You know, I tell people when they come into the gallery, if they stand in front of an image and it speaks to them and it makes the hair rise up on their arm and they get excited by it, that same excitement that they're feeling right then, they will probably always feel it every time. If it's hanging in their house, every time they walk by that image, they're always going to love it.
Yeah.
And it's really an instinctual thing, I think.
I think so too. I think I always tell people it's the same way I feel about when I look at art through the years, when I kind of go around and I see something, oh, that really grabs me.
Yeah.
And I have to look at it. Oh, I want that. You know, or at least I want to sit here and stare at it for a while.
Right.
But I just like getting pictures to people that really appreciate a lot of times the act. Like just to tell you a dumb story, recently we were interviewing a comedian here, this really amazing comedian here, this girl Sarah Schaefer, and she saw my picture of Pearl Jam there and she went, oh my God.
Which image?
The one here in the field. And she goes, my boyfriend worships Pearl Jam. And I just said, really? And she goes, yeah, he just is oh God, he would die to see this stuff. Oh my, she just freaked out. And I said, well, here, I'll make you a print. So I zapped out a print for her and just said, you know, here, give it to him. And she just went like, oh my God. And he, and like, I can't believe this. I said, you're going to score a point. You're going to get late tonight.
That's what a good photo really does. Exactly. For you.
True. And then I sat there and, you know, of course, then it was cool is the guy like framed it. Took a picture of it, Instagrammed it, tweeted it, attached my name to it. And he was just like in heaven that he got this picture of Eddie Vedder. And he was like,
and I that image is one of the first images people ever saw of Pearl Jam, is it not?
No. There's other ones. There were stuff that.
That was the Geffen's. Wasn't it Geffen?
No, not. You're taking Nirvana or Pearl Jam? I'm saying Pearl Jam.
What label? Sorry.
Pearl Jam is on Epic.
Sorry.
Nirvana's on Geffen.
Gotcha. So. Wasn't that a promotional photo, the one in the field?
I believe. No, it wasn't. That was shot for Rolling Stone. Oh, and
I said corrected.
No, it's okay. The I always say I don't expect everybody to know all the shit that I did because there's too much of it. I always say this to people, and I say, I don't know if I've said it to you, like what you've seen of my work is like literally that much of that much.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't even...
It's a big archive.
It's a huge archive. Like, this, all these boxes right here, I was just telling my friend last week, I said, we just got to start throwing all this away. Like, there's so much shit here. And she's just all like, why would you? I said, like, it's been sitting there for 10 years. I finally pulled out these portfolios because they've been sitting in there. And I was like, I haven't looked at my portfolios in 10 years. And I pulled them out and started, like, flipping through them. And I was like, wow, these are pretty good. Like, they're not so bad.
Not so bad, Chris Kafar.
But, you know, I don't know. So I want to talk about this. We touched it before we started, but I want to talk about limited edition prints. Okay. I have this thing that I've had this discussion for 30 years. I think 30 years ago, doing limited editions and signing prints and where photographers, I don't know, it was just different as an art form that I said to people, yeah, you do, you know, you print 20 or 100 or 500 or that's it, number them. But lately, I'm feeling like it's almost impossible to do, and I don't think people even care as much if that it's limited edition. I don't even think I've sold or given away, you know, 250 pictures of Pearl Jam. So I don't even know, and if 50 years from now, will people really care that they had number 12 or number 20? Or I'm not saying it's good or bad. I'm just saying
different
I just don't...
schools of thought about okay. that. Jim Marshall never numbered a print that he sold until...
Okay.
He started printing platinum prints, and those were small editions of, I believe some were editions of 15, 25, 35.
Of different sizes?
No, only one size,
okay.
I believe, 16 by 20. And some images, he did 15 of them, some he did 25, some
See, that's what I've always wanted to do.
But they should be, editions should be small editions.
Right. You don't go like, this is one of 10,000. Right.
You know, if it's Rolling Stones, you might sell 10,000, but not a fine art print anyway.
Yeah.
But so he never, I mean, he sold, you know, silver gelatin prints and never numbered them. He just signed them.
Okay.
But collectors love numbers. They love limited edition.
Okay.
And most people when they come in the gallery, are these limited? It's the first question they ask.
Okay.
Are these signed? Are they limited edition?
Okay.
That's what they want.
Okay.
Because they do look at it as a collectible. When a lot of people start collecting art, they start out in junior high or high school, and they get a poster for $1 or $5 or $10, and they pin it up on their wall.
Yeah.
Eventually, they go to college, and they start collecting limited edition. They go to a concert. They'll go to the merch booth, and there's a limited edition hand-signed concert poster.
Yeah.
That's their first piece of collectible art.
Yeah.
And from there, they go, oh, well.
Or it's that
photography.
That poster of Farrah Fawcett.
That would be the $2 poster.
Exactly. No, I just don't.
Which are probably worth $1,000
exactly.
now on eBay, by the way.
Yeah. I just think that, I honestly think that, like I said, I don't. If I, in a perfect world, what I've always dreamed of, I dreamed of just doing what you just said. I would love to take my 50 best photos or 25 of my most famous images, and I would love to get like a series of platinum prints, you know, like 10 of
each. Do it now while the chemicals are still available.
Exactly.
And there's only a few people in the country doing those.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah. There's only a few people that know how to do
it. I wonder how much it costs, would you say?
Don't know. I can find out.
We should do that.
But yeah. Remember we did, well, we did one platinum.
Oh, that's right. I forgot about
but
that.
But they really are special. For those not in the know, platinum prints reveal 200 shades of gray and black, where a silver gelatin print or a digital print may give you 20 shades. So the detail that is revealed with a platinum print is much greater than any other type of print, which is why they're so revered.
Yeah. You just gave me an idea. I think I want to do something like that for this whole greatest hits
thing. That'll be another $100, Chris.
But I like that. But if we did something like that, some sort of took the Nirvana or something, but just did like 10 of them and just said, this is it.
And, absolutely.
And put a hefty price tag on them.
There you go.
You know? Paid the bills.
Well, I'm so excited for this show coming up.
Well, it's coming up.
The contact sheets.
Well, everything you ain't into nothing yet. I've got a surprise for you in a few weeks. I'm gonna come bring you a big pile of proof sheets. Actually, gonna drop them on you, your and Elise's lap, and say, guys, go through them. Tell me what you like and don't like. And then my plan is, if I want to talk to you about, how can we get a gigantic light table put in?
Ooh, that would be fun.
I have this idea, like in the middle of your place, because your new place is so big and beautiful, like a gigantic light table, like 4x8.
Wow, that'd be amazing.
And just lay out proof sheets and put loops. And
that would be fabulous.
Grease pencils like we used to edit with, but like loops on it, and just like this big table just filled with proof sheets.
That's a great idea. I love it.
And then one of the things we wanted...
Who's your sponsor?
We're working on
it. Build this table for us.
You know what? They probably could. I know somebody who can. But the other thing I want to do is I want to do that, and I just don't know if you know this, but I want to broadcast live from this event.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah. So we got some big ideas.
Live from Mr. Music Head. I love it.
Yeah. Seriously.
That's fantastic.
If everything goes as planned, I keep saying to everybody, if everything goes, if this vision I have, if it happens, it's going to scare the shit out of everybody. So I just want to say thank you for coming by. We've talked a million times.
Thanks
for
having me.
I learn more every time that I talk to you.
That's great.
I can't believe, I always say, like, for all these years, I keep saying, like, yeah, I've known him, like, forever. I told my friend Nicole today, I was like, I'm going to see Sam, and what can I ask that I already don't know, or what am I going to learn, and then, you know, kind of get that weird thing, and I kind of go, well, I'm going to learn something.
Just wing it.
Yeah, I know, huh?
That's great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, no. So because I always tell, we like to close out our podcast with this. So where do people find you on the internet, interwebs? So the website is?
Actually, all you have to do now is just Google Mr. Music Head.
And it comes up?
And it comes up, but MrMusicHead.com.
And the Twitter is?
at Mr. Music Head.
Instagram?
Got me.
Instagram?
I don't know.
Oh, that's bad.
What is it?
I don't know either. I think it's... I know there's an underscore in there, but we'll have to look at it.
Underscore.
Isn't it Mr. Underscore
Mr.
Music?
Mr. Underscore Music Head. I think that's it. Yeah.
Well, Elise is going to be mad.
Oh, boy.
Well, thank you, sir.
The end of this. Thank you,
I appreciate
Chris.
It. Have a great night, everybody.
Best of luck to us both.
Thanks for listening.